Continue with what we began last week, a series on, we'll see how long it takes us, but it could be that this will be the last week, a series on the historical analysis on the issue of brain death, where it began, when it began, and ultimately the debate as it is, as it stands today. So we discussed last week that the debate really didn't begin with the topic of brain death. Brain death is a fairly modern term. It's a modern, even medically, the concept is a very recent concept. So the debate really began hundreds of years ago with the discussion that we saw brought in the Tshuvas about when they were began to be nervous for whatever reason that they were burying people too early. They were burying people alive for whatever reason. They had reason to believe that they were burying people alive before they were really certain as to whether they had died. And they had reason to believe that they were burying them before they had really died. So then there were decrees in specific parts of the world saying that you have to wait 3 days from at least the point of time where you think the person's dead till the flesh begins to decompose. Then you're 100% sure the person is dead and then you could bury. Obviously, this posed a tremendous problem for the Jewish community, because the Jewish community, we know we try to rush the burial as soon as possible. We don't even want to wait one night, let alone 2 nights, 3 days. So this is a big problem. We saw last week how ultimately, eventually they turned to Rav Yaakov Emden. Rav Yaakov Emden sends them to Moses Mendelssohn, hoping that his connections to the government will help them find their way out. But yet he, as we saw in the tshuva that he penned, he agreed with it. He said, if at the end of the day they're telling us that we're not 100% sure that death has occurred, so how could we be so bold as to bury the person before he is ready? And he marshaled evidence from two basic sources. Let's take a look quickly on the first page, the basic sources from where he reached his conclusion, number 5 and number 6. Number 5, again, reviewing from last week, where he quotes a Tosefta Meseches Machos, which says as follows: Yotzin lebeis hakvaros upokdin kol hamesim ad shloshim yom, that they would go out for 30 days to the beis hakvaros, 30 days after the person was buried. The ein choshesh mishum darkei amori, 30 days after the person was buried, they would still be visiting the kever, the grave, to be sure that the person was dead. And don't worry, don't think that this is a custom which came from other religions. It's not a problem, because at the end of the day, it's pikuach nefesh. Umaisa, and there's a story, shepaktu echad acher shoshim yom, they went back to the graveyard to visit a person after 30 days. V'chaya, and he was alive, esrim v'chaya esrim v'chamesh, 25 shanim, 25 years afterwards, v'acher kachmeh. So he added on another 25 years to his life. That's what the Tosefta says. V'acher hoilid chamisha banim v'acher kachmeh. So another one had 5 more kids, and then he died. So Moses Mendelssohn says, you see that they used to go and check, and that was why they rushed the burial so quickly, because they were burying in a situation above ground, either in a cave or the like, where they were able to check a few days after to make sure the person was really dead. But in our scenario, where we're burying underground, he says, we should really be waiting. It's pikuach nefesh, and even though the halacha is, you're not allowed to leave the dead over, even for a single night, here it's a case of pikuach nefesh, we're not really sure whether they're dead or not, so we have to do it. The second case, second gemara, where he brings a raya from, is Marmakum number 6, where the Gemara says as follows: Hazav, again, complicated halachas in terms of Tumah V'Tara, but for our purposes, Hazav v'Hazav v'Anida v'Yoledes v'Mitzora Shemesu Mitamin B'Masa. They are mitame others when being carried. Ad sheyimok habaser. Until ad sheyimok habaser. When are you sure that they have fully died? Ad sheyimok habaser. Until the flesh has begun to decompose. My taima. What's the reason? Says the Gemara. Amar Rav gzeira shema yisafu. We're nervous that perhaps he looks like he's dead, but he's not really dead yet. So until the flesh begins to decompose, you can't be 100% sure that the body is dead. So he says, clearly you see from here, that we can't be 100% sure until the body is decomposed. They used to say you have to bury right away because they're able to check after burial. Nowadays we can't check after burial, so we should wait. So after the community got rejected from Moses Mendelssohn, they went to the Yavetz, and we saw the tshuva from Rav Yaakov Emden last week as well, where Rav Yaakov Emden argues strongly, and he says, how could you say that for as long as we know they've been burying the way we've been burying, and for as long as we know the Jewish communities have been burying immediately, and you're going to say that everyone was being over these Isurim, but perhaps the person was still alive, they weren't being as careful as they should have been, it can't be. And again, we saw the tension in halacha, and we saw the tension also in hashkafa, in terms of how easily do we let new things creep in terms of against what the minhagim used to be, what the minhagim were always in Klal Yisrael from time immemorial. The last thing that we saw from Rabbi Yaakov Emden was a tremendous proof that he brought from the Gemara in Yuma. This is going to be one of the major sources, which is going to be batted around, and we're going to have to understand. Again, Rabbi Yaakov Emden rejects the sources brought by Mendelssohn, saying that for whatever reason, in those particular situations of the Tosefta and the Gemara, there was a rush, and they buried them under, they were being persecuted, and therefore they had to bury them in a hurry. And since they buried them in a hurry, they weren't as careful as they should have been. But in a regular situation where we're not rushing anything and we're careful and the Chevra Kedisha knows what they're doing and they have time to make sure everything's okay, so you don't have to be concerned that the body is still alive. And he says, after all, take a look at the Gemara in Yuma. The Gemara in Yuma we saw in Mar Malkum number 1 on the top page is as follows. Again, this is the major source that we'll be discussing. Misha Nafla Lav Mapolis. Someone who a building falls down upon them. Safek hu sham, safek einu sham. And we, the bystanders, are not sure whether there's a person there, whether the person is not there. Safek chai, safek meis. Even if he is there, we're not sure if he made it out alive or he didn't, if he's still under there alive or if he had died on impact. Safik nafchri, safik yisrael, mefakhin alav esagal. So even though it's Shabbos, even though it's Yom HaKippurim, so we are mechalal Shabbos, Yom HaKippur, whatever it may be, because pikuach nefesh, even safik pikuach nefesh, on the chance that there is someone alive there, we're going to do whatever we can. Matzu'u chai, if you find him to be alive, mefakhin. So you continue until you save him, right? In Yonah Diyoma with the miners. This is what was going on today. The imez, but if he is dead, Yani Chuhu, then you leave him until after Shabbos, after Yom Tov. Amar Rav Papa. So how do you know whether he's dead or whether he's alive? That's the question. Amar Rav Papa, so Rav Papa, again, the Gemara, I took the part of the Gemara which is most important, but I skipped a little bit. Amar Rav Papa Machlokes Mimata Lamal. The discussion that we just had that in the Gemara that I took out, that's only talking about when you're uncovering the dead person from his feet and up. Aval Mimala Lamata. But let's say you start uncovering him from the place, the location of the head. So what you bump into first is his head. Aval Mimala Lamata Kevin de Badak Le Ad Choitmo. Once you get until his nose, Shuv Eino Tzarech. Then you don't have to check anymore. D'chsiv kol asher nishmas ruach chayim be'apa. Once you get to his nose and you see there's no air coming out of his nose, he's not breathing, there's no breath coming out of his nose, so therefore you could be sure that he has died. It's an indication that he has died. Now, as our conversation stands right now, we are not saying that the moment that he stops breathing is the moment of death. What we are saying is if he has stopped breathing in terms of there's no air coming out of his nose, again, so for our purposes right now, so that is an indication that he has died. Again, there's a difference between, and this is a crucial point to make, there's a difference between discussing a point in time where we know death has occurred, which was the conversation until a couple decades ago, because we never really knew what was death. We just want to know, did death occur? What is death exactly? We didn't know, but it wasn't really so relevant. Now the conversation has transitioned, which we'll be discussing tonight, is forget whether death has occurred, at what, we're so in tune with what's going on at every point in time in the body, so at what point exactly does Yahadus, does Judaism define death? When is death? So the conversation switches from, do we know that whatever that point in death is, that it has occurred, and two, at what point, let's try to define it as best as we could, at what point could we put a finger on and say, that point is the Shas HaMavis. But for now, until organ donation became a viable option, so that was really irrelevant. As we mentioned before, once with the advent of organ donation, that's when this question of when death is became so crucial. Because if we could figure out a way to say that death occurs halachically before the heart stops pumping, and therefore circulation is still going on, so the organs are still great organs to donate, therefore that leaves us open with a great possibility. But before organ donation, it wasn't really so relevant when death occurred. Where the question just, what? Okay, but much less. It's a nafkamina, but it's much less relevant. So get out of the house. It's not as big of a deal as in terms of organization. Now we really have to define. So that was the question that controversy that erupted at that time in the 1800s, and that was the machlokes between Moses Mendelssohn and the Yavits and the problem facing the particular Jewish community. Then we fast forward a little bit, not too much, but a little bit, where a similar discussion rises. And Machlok is a debate between two well-known individuals, between the Chassam Sofer and the Maritz Chiyas. Again, the Chassam Sofer in his Tshuva, as we will see, doesn't write the Maritz Chiyas' name mefirish. If you're going through Tshuva's Chassam Sofer, you wouldn't know he's writing the Tshuva to the Maritz Chiyas, but the Maritz Chiyas did publish the back and forth, and therefore it became clear who this exchange was between. And again, a similar tension, not nearly as great as Mendelssohn versus the Yavis. Again, the Maritz Chiyas, of course, is printed in the back of Gemara, is one of our... one of our giants, who's Al Piv Anu Chayim, who we depend on his explanation of the Gemara. But again, he was someone who probably was willing to go a little bit further than the Chassam Sofer, who was known as a person holding the fort in terms of that time, the time of the Haskalah, and the time where the Reform movement was just getting going. So the Chassam Sofer was the one who was a staunch traditionalist, nothing, davar chadash, asim in atara, no new changes, no innovation. And the Maritz Chiyas probably was willing to push it a little bit more, which is why, even in some communities till today, the Maritz Chiyas, his name has a certain connotation. Just to explain a little bit about the Maritz Chiyas, I'll read a little bit to you in terms of who he was. So Maritz Chiyas was born on November 20th, 1805, until October 12th, 1855. He lived a very short life and was a tremendously accomplished person for a 50-year life. He is the only, as they write over here on Wikipedia, he's the only commentator included in the back of Vilna Shas with a PhD. Again, it already tells you his orientation, where he's coming from. In 1846, a law was promulgated in Austria compelling rabbinical candidates to pass a university examination in liberal arts and philosophy. The Maritz Chiyas received the degree of Doctor of Philosophy. And then he became Rav, and then he became a very important figure. He was probably the first one, and probably one of our best, in terms of within traditional Judaism, Orthodox Judaism, who applied the approach of the academics, of the secular learning to learning in terms of our history, in terms of our Mesorah, in terms of our tradition. The way they put it over here is, the Maritz Chiyas produced many works of scientific study of Judaism that were faithful to tradition but modern in orientation and organization. So he was, again, a person on the fence who was very important for traditional Jews in terms of maintaining their value, in terms of maintaining how they were respected. In the words of Dr. Bruya Huttner, who's Dr. Bruya Huttner? That's Rav Huttner, Yitzhak Huttner's daughter, who got a PhD. I think her dissertation was on the Maritz Chiyas, who's now the head for the past many decades, is the head of BJJ, based after Yerushalayim, in Yerushalayim. So she wrote her doctorate on the Maritz Chiyas, and she apparently calls it the traditionalist and the maskil. That was the subject of her PhD. So again, a person who was able to waver between both words and was a tremendous asset to the community. And we will see that tension play out within... What? And we will see that we give another shiur on what the differences are, but Rav Tzvi Chiyas, Marina Rav Tzvi Chiyas. So we will see that tension play out between the Chassam Sofer, and the reason why I'm focusing on that is because, aside from our primary goal of getting to the bottom of the halacha, we will also be fascinating in terms of this exchange is probably one of the best ways to see that tension be playing out, because this is one of the only exchanges we have directly between the two of them. So let's first take a look at the tshuva, the shaila that the Maritz Chiyas wrote to the Chassam Sofer. And again, it touches on a lot of the same ideas that we have been reading between the Yavetz and Moses Mendelssohn. But the question was an entirely different question. It wasn't a question of whether we could leave over the dead as opposed to burying them, we could hold the dead from being buried for 3 days. The question was as follows. Take a look in page 6.
And it's interesting that the term that they use for keeping them for 3 days is to wake them.
Very good.
They were probably worried
that's how it started.
They were going to wake up.
Right, very good.
That's where wake comes from.
Yeah, when they say, I don't know, but it...
Makes sense. Very good.
Makes sense.
If it's not true, it should be. That's very
good.
Very good. So take a look at page number 6 in the packet. Page number 6 in the packet, we have the Maritz Chiyas is... The Maritz Chiyas is Shaila that he posed, that he sent to the Chassam Sofer. And the Shaila goes as follows. We'll go through it rather quickly. Again, it says some sefer on the top, but it's just in this. It happened to be published in my volume, my edition of the Chassam Sofer. It was written. This was Shaila was written by the Maratzchis. Bal Shaila lefanai imutter lerofe kohen laaso lesaseg begoses. Is a kohen, a doctor kohen, able to work with a goses, someone who is has begun the process of death already? Ki b'shulchan aruch yodeya mevur she'ase lekohen liyos bibaya sheyesh shama goses. The Shulchan Aruch says, page number 6. The Shulchan Aruch says that it's aser for a kohen to be in the same house as a goses, because he's going to die imminently, and therefore, and who will be mitami the kohen. So the kohen can't even be in the house of, can't be in the house of a dead person for sure, but for even someone who is on the verge of dying. Even though I know it's also for a kohen to be in the house of a goyses, but it could be if he's a doctor, pikuach nefesh, maybe he'll be able to extend the life of this goyses. So perhaps we should let a doctor who is a kohen work on a goyses. That was the shayla that came in front of the Maratzchis, and again, that particular shayla we won't focus on. Perhaps we'll focus on a different shir. But this ultimately is brought. This exchange is ultimately brought into the brain death controversy, and we will focus on that part of it. So skip down to the underline at the end of the paragraph. Vafilu meis tachas yad harofi gamken lav klum ovid dehare meis b'shasa pikuach. And even if he ends up dying, he's trying to save his life, it's not a problem. Continues the Maratzchis. Vehosafti, and here we see where we transition into the question that we've been dealing with. Vehosafti od, and except for the reason why I think we could be makel that I've been discussing in the past paragraph about Tumas Kohanim, vehosafti od bezet, de'im b'meis gomer. And here, it's listen closely to where he goes with this. With a dead person who's really dead, not a ghost, is Limara Ayin. According to the way we perceive it, he seems to be dead. Hamevinim, Limara Ayin Hamevinim. All the doctors are saying he is truly dead. And he's sitting there like a rock. And still, certain chachamim wanted to permit us not to bury them right away. Namely, who is this chacham? Presumably, Mendelssohn, right? He didn't want to bury right away. And he wrote a nice valid tshuva about it. The tshuva coming from rabbinic sources, right? So he wanted to say that we shouldn't bury him. So says Maratzchis, I'm not going that far to say we shouldn't bury the person, but people were willing to be over on an Isser Daraisa because they might still be alive. So what I want to do is much less than that, says the Maratzchis. Even though we hold hamalin as meso over belav, someone who leaves the dead body over doesn't bury them is over belav. Because they found this source from this Tosefta in Smachos, that you go to visit the graveyard for 3 days. And someone lived 25 years after they were buried. And someone else had 5 kids after they were buried. And they bring another proof. What's the other proof that we saw earlier? The Gemara Nida. The Gemara Nida says you have to be concerned that the person is still alive until the flesh begins to decompose. So that's why they want to be makel and say you don't have to bury right away. Vili Nira, and now the Maratzchis is adding on another proof to this. He's saying, and I think I could bring another proof that we shouldn't be burying until we're 100% sure that the person is dead. Vili Nira Raya Chadasha. I'll add on a Raya that wasn't brought before. Dere Metzinu Hilcha Shabbos. We see in Hilcha Shabbos the Kasef HaRamah. That nowadays we don't do some sort of extreme C-section to rip the stomach of the mother open to get the vlad out, even during a weekday. Because we don't know when the mother is, again, if the mother is dying in childbirth, so we still will not do anything to her body in order to save the life of the child, because we don't know if the mother has died yet or not. So you don't know, apparently we don't know the exact time of death. Because of a magen of ramsham, d'chayshinan le'ilof. Why won't we touch the mother even to save the kid? Because we don't know if the mother's really dead, even though it seems that she has died. We'll end up killing her, Rachmana Litzan. So it's already precedent. There's already precedent. We already see well documented that there are people, there are rabbanim, that are concerned that even when it looks like they're fully dead, we're still nervous that they're still alive. So says the Maratzchis, in my case, Bechozos, Yishsafik, Ula, Yokam, Achronafim, Nisha, Ein, Itanu, Rayus, Bruas, Alfisas, Ruach, Chaim, Rakai, Dein, Amiko. We don't have a proof. So in my case, where we know that the death hasn't occurred yet, we should still let the Kayan come in and do whatever he thinks can be can be done. So this is the question posed by the Maratzchis, why he thinks there is room to be Mekel to the Chsam Sofer. Take a look at the next page, on page number 7, where he continues his argument. Says the Maratzchis on the underlined part, Al koponim harav lo yachish denisayun sheyesh efsharus lecholi hashtog v'china karechem shenizbatel hanashima. You can't disagree with me that it's possible for someone to have stopped breathing, and yet he's still alive. He stopped breathing, yet he is still alive. We already see how this is going to come into play when it comes to the brain death controversy. That's the argument that I'm making, says the Maratzchis. What do you think? And he continues. He says, and you're going to tell me that, okay, that was just Mendelssohn, but the Yaivitz and all the traditional Rabbonim, they attacked him. Says the next paragraph, even according to those that oppose this chiddush of holding off the burial, that screamed and yelled, the Yaivitz says, how could you be doing such a thing? And they brought a proof from the Gemara in Yuma that we took a look at. What was the Gemara in Yuma? You only check till the nose. Why? Because the minute he stopped, if we check the nose and he's not breathing, we know he's dead. Shenemar kol asher nismas ruach chayim ba'apav. Re'inu shechachalenu zal hechziku as pisuk neshama liraya choytechas. We see that Chazal viewed the lack of breathing, the fact that he stopped breathing is a raya muchrachas that the person is dead. Alafisas achias afil b'makam pikuach nefesh. So you'll tell me, how can you bring a proof from those rabbanim? We know that the traditional approach is that we bury right away, because we know the Gemara and Yuma tells us that if you're certain that the breathing has stopped, it's always scary saying this in front of a doctor, but you'll tell me if I'm getting anything wrong. So if we know the breathing has stopped, at least the Gemara seems to say, we know the breathing is wrong, so then it stops, so then we could be 100% certain that the death has occurred. So you tell me those Rabbanim, what about those Rabbanim? So it continues the Maratzchis on the bottom left, where I have the line towards. And this is where he says his Chiddush. Again, just to set up the halachic debate we have over here, is basically between a Gemara and Yuma, which it seems to indicate that the cessation of breathing is death, between a Gemara or a Tosefta in Maseches Smachos and Nida, which seems to say that even after they buried, and presumably the person wasn't breathing, they weren't going to bury the person if he was still breathing, presumably the breathing had stopped, still we're concerned that the person is still alive. So we have this tension between these two sources. So we saw how Rav Yaakov Emden deals with the sources of Maseches Machos, saying that now that was a gunshot. They were under the wire. They had to bury in a rush. Fine. But how's the Maratzchis, how's the other Kasai going to deal with this Gemara and Yuma? How are they going to say that it's not a problem from the Gemara and Yuma? So here we see the attempt of the Maratzchis, what he says. Why is this not a question from the Gemara and Yuma? You're going to ask me from the Gemara and Yuma? Marnuma is not a problem. Why? Val pize yesh be emes lahasir asagas hamisnagdim vilomar debe emes meafisas haneshima ein raya alamisa. There's no indication from the fact that he stopped breathing to the fact that he is dead. Imokmina le becheskas chai, and we assume a person is alive until we know otherwise. Zechol davar adshe yimakabas, until we see the flesh decompose. Vechoshashin leilif, we're always concerned that he'll come back. So you ask me from the Gemara and Yuma. Had bin afal hagal b'Shabbos ain bodkin rak ad chotim v'sulo shiny hasam kevin shabishas nefilas hagal isra cheskas chayim shelo b'miktas rak le'inyan hatzolas nafsho ein mashkichin u'mefachin ulay adayin cha. Av miyash shebodku osa ad chotim v'lo hirgushu bo nishima Shuv leish lanu raya atzuma dinefilas agal paula etlo kolkach ashen is batzal shimah. So what the Maratzchias is suggesting is follows. He says, yes, we don't know a person is dead until the body starts to decompose. So what's going on in the Gemara in Yuma? He says as follows. He says, the Gemara in Yuma, we have a question. We see a building collapsed on a person. Now, we don't know whether the building collapsing had an effect on the person. Again, until we know otherwise, the person is bichezkas. He has a chazaka that he's alive. So until we know otherwise, we assume he's alive. So we begin to uncover the rubble. And then once we see that he has stopped breathing, so then you're right. We don't know for sure that he is dead. But we know that this trauma of the building collapsing had an effect on him, had a very strong effect on him, that he no longer has a chazaka of being chai. And such a, again, we don't know that he's dead, but we know that the trauma of the event had a major impact on his body, so we can no longer consider him bechezkas chai, that he has a chazaka, that he's probably still alive, because we know he was alive. We know that something bad has happened to him. Again, either he's come very close to death, or he's actually dead. And once we no longer have a chazaka that he's alive, so we don't know whether he's alive or dead, we no longer have a chazaka that he's alive, so that's why we say, on Shabbat, you don't continue the Chil Shabbos, you don't continue the Chil Yom Kippur. A tremendous chiddush from the Maratzchias, because, generally speaking, we say on Shabbos, even if there's an iota of a safek, we're mechal Shabbat. So here he's saying, just because we no longer have the chezkas chai, even though we are not sure that he's fully dead, that he is dead, we still will stop being mechal Shabbos. That's how he deals with the Gemara in Yuma, and he says, but to be certain that someone is dead, you have to wait till the body begins to decompose. This is the shaila that he poses to the Chsam Sofer. Chsam Sofer, as you could probably well imagine, did not like this argument too much and went at him fiercely. Again, much of the debate, the exchange between the Chsam Sofer has nothing to do with Tumas Kohanim, has nothing to do with really with the shaila at hand, which is why it's so important for us. Again, it's a very long exchange. I took out the parts that I think are important to our conversation. The parts that I excised are the parts which either they're involved in defining when death is, and also where you see this tension between the two different approaches, and perhaps you could get a glimpse into the tension of the time. So let's take a look at the response of the Chsam Sofer to the Maratzchias. Note again that he doesn't mention who he's writing this tshuva to. Page number 9. Says the Chsam Sofer as follows: Shalom v'chol tov. Ahu Rav Hamor Agola Achoratz Hamuflag Zayis Ranan. Again, you go through. Moreno Rav Ploini. Rav Dekilas Kadosh Ploini. Yikraso Hagiani v'nafsho Yikara b'she'elo aso Nidon Ir Achas Sharoifi Kohen. And he goes through the whole question as we read it in the Maratzchias. We're not going to go through the whole thing now for time purposes. Hine bikare dvarim elu yoytzim mipegavra de kavase amadati marid. Listen to the strength of the language. Amadati marid nip v'nivhal meor mihu zeh ve'ezehu shehitu bedorish lefenenu halanus mesim. I don't know what you're talking about. You're telling me there's a machlekes. Chachamim, elu v'elu. There's a machlekes between great chachamim. Do we leave over the dead 3 days or do we not? I don't know what you're talking about, the Chsam Sofer. He says, there's no machlekes. He says, mi hu zeh ve'ezehu, right? Purim's coming up. Who is this that you're talking about that mattered the halonas mesim? Ulahater api chachme Yisrael lo shamati v'lo re'isi. And I've never heard anyone be makel based on chachme Yisrael lo shamati v'lo re'isi. V'hine nitle be'ilon gadol be'tshuva yayvetz chelek beiz v'dimyoni v'zichrono koisev lo. Kiloi nimtza shem kan, doesn't say who it is. Ach b'sifre, you're being told that you're reasoning on the Yavitz. But if you take a look at Rav Yaakov Endin, ach b'sifre ha'me'asvim, u'b'sifre b'kure itim nimtza igaros mishnas tof kuf lamabez, sha'chocham ta'an, that's Rav Moshe Midesi, that's Rav Moses Mendelssohn, ta'an lahatir isurin shal chachma Yisrael ba'amru ki roifez manenu amru she'ein no dagvo ha'magul ben chayim l'mavas. Moses Mendelssohn tried to be makel, saying that chachma Yisrael, the doctors of our time, don't know the difference between dead and alive. So he tried to be makel, but Rav Yaakov Emden never agreed to such a thing. From the Gemara Nida, as we saw a few times already. And like the way, and he brings it from the Rambam as well. So they made an argument from that Maseches Machas. If for the Kavod HaMeis we're willing to push off the dead, push off the burial, so too, for sure, if we're nervous that he's still alive, we should be willing to push off the burial. Take a look at page 10, the second paragraph. Says the Chassam Sofer, but you're mistaken. He said he never agreed with this. He rejected the whole thing. And he wrote back a letter to that community, and he said that you should oppose this new edict. I don't know why in your mind this is a machlekes. Already you see a little bit of the different approaches. One person views it as a machlekes. Some Sefer says, I've never heard any one of the Chachmei Yisrael muttering such a thing. Now let's get to the paragraph which is headed on page number 10, Derech Kfiyas HaMavis. Actually, until then, before we'll get back to that in a minute, let's skip to, just to sum up the, just to wrap up the portion where we see the this difference in approaches between the Chassam Sofer and the Maariv Tzchi, skip to page 12. Oh, we'll get to that. We'll get to when the Shiloh flips on his head. We'll get to that. Let me just finish up this part of this aspect in terms of the different approaches. So take a look at what I have is page number 12. It says Tuf Tzadi Tes on top. The main objection to the Maariv Chiyas, as we'll see, the Chassam Sofer pens a very harsh tshuva back to the Maariv Chiyas. And the main objection of the Maariv Chiyas in his letter back to the Chassam Sofer is not that I disagree with you in halacha. It's that I think you went a little overboard. Why'd you go so crazy about me? And the main fight between them becomes over this isra of halanas mesim, of not burying someone. Again, everyone agrees it's aser. Is it a lav or is it a lav and aser? And that's what much of the exchange has to go. Is it a lav? Is it just aser because it's a lav? Or no, is it also a lav? Is it a lav and an aser? And they go back and forth. Basically, the machlekes is, I don't know why you went so crazy. You're making it sound like I'm doing something so terrible. You went a little overboard. That's what the Maariv Tzchi's response. He's not disagreeing with Chassam Sofer and halacha, it doesn't sound like. He's just saying he thinks he reacted too much. So let's take a look quickly on page number 12. You said twice, three times in your last tshuva, that there's an aseh and a lois aseh, leaving over the not burying the dead. All I see is a lois aseh. Again, the issue at hand is it's really irrelevant. Is it a leisa? Everyone agrees it's aser. He's saying, I don't know why you're going crazy. You're saying it's a say and a leisa. It's not. He said, maybe there's one sheet of the Ramban who holds it's both an aseh and leisa say. He says, the stimus hashas is that it's a just leisa say. But what's great is, take a little bit, go a little bit further. For time's sake, we'll skip a little to page 13, where you could see the emotion of the Maariv Tzchi's. Page 13, the top right corner, Maariv Tzchi'ah says as follows. Okay, we'll skip that. V'efshar degam zehu alibi d'chulei alma, still going in, whether it's an asei or a lois asei or both. Whether it's asei v'lois asei or just a lois asei. Al koponim, towards the end of the paragraph. Hifriz adoini al hamida b'mesh v'sarot shesvarasu pshita d'chulei alma. I think you went a little far. Yesh asei v'lois asei b'lanas meisim. B'frat gam anoichi asarti alanas meisim. I also agree that it's aser. V'chi b'shvil sholoi basi aleim b'charav v'su racham. Since I'm not waging war against them, yichtoi v'adoini hachadosh aser min ha-tora lo mehem v'lo amonim. You went all out against me. You said what becomes famous from the Tam Sofer, anything new is aser. Hachadosh aser min ha-tora. You're going crazy on me. He says, I agree with you that it's aser. But you have to go so crazy. So you think it's a lois aser as well. You think it's a lois aser v'it aser. You have to attack me so harshly. And that's what the Tam Sofer, he doesn't let it go. He says, yes. HaChadosh Asa Min HaTorah, you see the tension of the time, you see what's going on, the Haskalah of the Reform movement, the Chassam Sofer, yes, HaChadosh Asa Min HaTorah. Any little pirtza, I don't know what it could lead to. And there you really see the Chassam Sofer's approach comes through. Yeah. Take a look at the continuation of on page number 13, where the Chassam Sofer writes as follows. Just above the part that I underline. Tain libcha lidvarim, pen yetzi pirtza is gidarim. Who knows what could come from even a small pirtza? If I say that it's only an asei and it's really a loisa save asei, I don't know what that could lead to. Pirta Gedarim v'isha yasher be'enov yaseh ki yitlu hadavar b'gdolim v'yifritu bosha olim. Ani kasavdi alonis mesim yeshba aseh v'loisaseh ki al koponim haramban kasav ken, because I know that that's the sheet of the Ramban. And you might be right that everyone disagrees with him, but I know that's the sheet of the Ramban. V'ein nafkus b'zmanazen. It doesn't make a difference whether it's a loisaseh v'aseh. V'toiv lehalos ha'iser. And this becomes a major point of contention, a major point which is studied between the Chassam Sofer and the Maariv Tzchias. What's the lashon? V'ein afkusu b'zman hazeh l'dinah. V'toiv lehalos ha'iser. Chassam Sofer's approach is, you always go with the most chamer. V'toiv lehalos ha'iser. If there's a potential it's a lois ha'seh na'seh, you say it's a lois ha'seh na'seh because you don't want to begin any pirtza, so you don't want to let any room for any wriggle room. So the Maariv Tzchias' approach is, no, it's a big vechlekes, you're going to say, not necessarily ma'alos as a isser. We don't make it the most grave isser just because there's room to say this. So there you see the difference in approaches. Now let's come back to the question at hand. The question at hand is kviyas hamisa. What is the time, the moment of death? Again, it began with a conversation whether to bury. That conversation was brought into this conversation whether a doctor could enter. And now the Chassam Sofer is going to pen what he thinks is the definition of death, and now this truth of Chassam Sofer is going to be used as a major source in our current discussion, our current machlokes controversy of brain death. At that point, again, as we mentioned before, that's when it's going to transition from a question of do we know the person is dead yet to a question of perhaps this is the moment of death. So let's see what the Chassam Sofer says. V'loimar nefel derech kviyas man, back on page 10. V'loimar nafel mapele shayne kasher kosav yedidi. Tmiya gedola be'enai v'chi kara nishmas ruach chaim b'mapolis ro. But all davar yadua behepich ki amesim misa pisomis yishlochas yosish and nidme kemes machmas behalo ke'en choyle shisuk shekor shalak. So he says you attack this raya from Yuma. You said it doesn't make sense. Why should we be concerned just because the person stopped breathing doesn't mean necessarily that he has died. So skip to the next paragraph where the Chassam Sofer goes against it. He says as follows. V'hine kein mashma berambam. Someone who closes the eyes of the person while he is dying, he doesn't wait for the person to die. So it's as if he killed the person, because any movement of the body at that time could hasten the death, and you will be chayif for shvichas damim. You wait a little after the person is dead to make sure that he's really dead. And the Rambam should have told us, when is the point of death? At what point it is? Why didn't the Rambam tell us this? It must be that he's assuming, like the Gemara tells us in Maseches Yuma, when the building falls on him, that we could always take the test of the nose, and then we know that the point of death has occurred. So you see from the Rambam, clearly says Chassam Sofer, that he is paskening like this Gemara in Yuma. So once that moment has come, you wait a few minutes, and then you know the person is dead. As long as you wait a little bit, shuv yotzim ichshash ilif, you don't have to be concerned that he's still alive and you could touch the body. So that is the Chassam Sofer's approach based on the Rambam. Now skip to page 11, where the Chassam Sofer writes as follows. Bitul haneshima ve'ein shum defika choshuv kemes. The Chassam Sofer writes, aval kol she'achar shemutul ke'evin doymi. Ve'ein bo shum defika. Any body that's lying there like an inanimate stone. Ve'ein bo shum defika. And there's no heartbeat. Vim achakach batal haneshima, and then there's no breath afterwards. Ein lanu ela divrei terasenu hakdoisha shehu meis. Vilo yalinu also, you have to bury him. Vametamilo, and a kohen that goes in, imhu kohen loike acharasa, we will give him malchus. Again, very important words of the Chassam Sofer. Kol sha'achar shemutol ke'evin. He's lying like a stone. Ve'ein bo shum defika. There's no pulse. There's no heartbeat. Ve'achar kach batal neshima. And after there's no heartbeat, there's no pulse, he stops breathing. Ein lanu ela divrei tereseinu hakdoisha. We rely on the Gemara Maseches Yuma that the breathing is the simen muvik that the person is dead and the person we assume has died. Now we fast forward many decades to the current machlekes, which begins as follows. The debate began, I'll read you now from an article written by Rabbi Yitzhak Reidowitz. The concept of total brain death as an alternative to the older definition of irreversible circulatory and respiratory failure. So it used to be that you needed to have irreversible, your circulatory system had to be down and your respiratory system had to be down, was first introduced, so they began playing with this notion of death in the year 1968 in a report authored by a special committee of the Harvard Medical School and was later adopted with some modification by the President's Commission for the Study of Ethical Problems in Medicine and Biomedical Research as a recommendation for state legislators and courts. The brain death standard was also employed in model legislation known as the Uniform Determination of the Death Act, which has been enacted by a large number of jurisdictions, and the standard has been endorsed by the influential American Bar Association. While New York is one of the few jurisdictions that does not have a brain death statute, it has adopted the identical rule through binding decisions of its highest court. So in the end of the day, what comes out? For whatever reason, the current definition of death is now a composite one. Death is deemed to occur when there is either irreversible cessation of circulatory and respiratory failure, that's always death was defined as, but now irreversible cessation of all functions of the entire brain, including the brainstem. Once the brain is dead, so the body can no longer breathe on his own, it's not capable of breathing, so even if, for whatever reason, machines are keeping him going, there is still a heartbeat. The principal utility of the second standard permits declaring a comatose, ventilator-dependent patient incapable of spontaneous respiration, but whose heart is still beating due to the provision of oxygen via an artificial breathing apparatus. So this was the major nafka meeting. You have a person who is completely brain dead, but his heart is still beating because of supplying oxygen with a machine. So the heart's still beating, the blood is still going through the system, the organs are still ripe for a transplant. If we deem him dead halachically, we're able to do a transplant and save another person's life, because halachically he's dead. If he's still alive halachically, as Rabbi Moshe Feinstein points out, then we'd be killing the old person, no matter how brain dead he is. So how do we come to this conclusion? This was the debate that was raging beginning with the year 1968, when this machlokas began. So there are many different sources that are involved in the discussion. Most of them we have read already, so we'll make the rest of our job fairly easy. What is the reason to be makel? Where are the people that are coming? At the end of the day, the person still has a heartbeat. So you're going to say he's dead? You're so sure that he's dead that you're willing to pull the plug, you're willing to take an organ of his, you're willing to kill him? That's how sure. Again, you have to be beyond the shadow of a doubt. There's no taking chances over here. Even if you're 75% sure, it's not enough over here. So where do you get this from, that once he's brain dead, halachically he's dead? So where does it come from? It comes from a combination of two basic sources. Two basic, again, there's entire books written on this, but the two most off-quoted sources are the Gemara in Yuma. At the end of the day, the Gemara in Yuma said, if he stopped breathing, then you could assume he's dead. So that means that as long as he stopped breathing, we don't know what's going on with the heart. It doesn't say you check the pulse. As long as he stopped breathing, finished. It's over, you can assume he's dead. That's source number one. Source number two,
It doesn't work today. I mean, we have machinery to keep him breathing.
Yeah, no, but they're saying that machinery is not going to do it. It means that a person has stopped breathing on his own. Again, you mean breathing on his own or supplying oxygen to the heart?
If you're breathing, you're probably supplying oxygen.
But let's say, is there a way of not breathing and you just have a ventilator supplying oxygen? Meaning that's what we're talking about here, right?
You can be a ventilator.
The ventilator breathes for you.
Right. So halachically, that's not called breathing. So he's not breathing.
If you're saying halachically, that's not called breathing, but it is.
It's supplying oxygen. So that's what do you mean alive?
That's
the question. Exactly. Like so that's what he's saying. The heart's
like
still.
The balloon. The balloon is not alive. It's just pumping, 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 pumping.
No, but you can be respiratory arrest. Cardiac arrest. Let's say you've been choking on an airway.
Okay. So we'll see. We'll see. It has to be irreversible.
With that logic.
Yeah.
Right.
It has to be irreversible.
Right. If we're going to take everybody who's brought into an emergency room, or who that solid comes to.
You're saying there's never a point where the doctors say, "I'm sure this is irreversible." But the ventilator's still on? There's never a point where the doctor will tell you, I'm 100% sure.
Now you're getting into the issue of brain death. That's a separate issue.
Uh-huh. Okay, so let's discuss what we'll discuss this, and then you'll tell me. Right, that's it. So Marmakum number one is the Gemara in Yuma. Marmakum number two, I'll read it quickly, is Marmakum number four. Sorry, but the second Marmakum they bring is Marmakum number four on the page over here, is a Mishnah Maseches Olos. Adam Einu Metame Ashetetze Nafsha. Not Tame until he dies. Afilu Meguyev, Afilu Geises. Even if his limbs are cut off and he's a Geises. Zalkek Li Yibam, Upater Mini Yibam. He's still considered alive with regard to Hilchas Yibam. Michael Bechuma, Poisel Bechuma. He's still considered alive with regard to Hilchas Chuma. Vechem Behema Vechaya. Einan Metame Ashetetze Nafsha. Until their soul is gone. What does it mean their soul is gone? Hutzu Roish Ehem. Let's say their head was chopped off. Afal Pisha Mefarchasim. Even though their limbs are still moving, so their head, they're decapitated. Temeyin Kigon Zonov Shal Lata Shahi Mefarchasim. Even though they're moving, you don't assume that they're alive. We know that that movement is not considered alive. If they're decapitated, so you could assume that they're dead. So come the proponents of brain death, and you say, first of all, the Gemara in Yuma tells us, once he's not breathing, again, you could be pumping oxygen in, but that's not considered breathing. Once there's no air coming out of his nose, he's dead. Secondly, we have decapitation as a sign. So when a person's brain death, again, a big stretch, they say, he's basically, for all intents and purposes, physiologically, he's decapitated. There's nothing going on above the neck. So these two sources, they say, we're sure brain death is death, therefore you could take the organs. What are the major attacks on this? The attack on decapitation is a fairly easy attack. So how could you compare literal decapitation to physiological decapitation? Just because there's nothing going on physiologically doesn't mean that it's the same exact thing what Chazal meant in terms of the head cut off. But what about the Gemara in Yuma? So let's take a look at Rashi Marmakum number two, where Rashi says the Gemara in Yuma, where you do the breathing test, you see if there's air coming out of his nose. Ad heichan hu bodek, where does he check? Im doime lemei, says Rashi, she'eino mezes evarav. If a person seems like he's dead, and he's not moving his limbs, he's sitting there like a rock. Ad heichan, so now he's lying there, he's not moving at all, he seems to be dead, nothing's going on, so I want to make sure he's dead. So Rashi says, that's what the Gemara means, you check the breathing. But if a person's heart is still going, if a person's body is still functioning, so then the breathing test is lo mailed velo morid. When was the Gemara saying you could do a test based on the breathing, says Rashi? That's only when everything else seems to indicate that it's already shut down, that the body is dead. So once that's true, so you want to know for sure, so check the breathing. But just to be somech on the breathing alone, as you said before, the heart's still beating, the blood's still running. You can't say that that is a sign of death from the Gemara in Yuma. And then they say, and I'll prove it to you that this is a way of understanding, because take a look at the Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer we just read, he was very clear. He said, if he's lying there like an even doimim, like an inanimate stone, and there's no defika, there's no pulse, there's no heartbeat, then we assume the cessation of breathing is death. But again, cessation of breathing is only important if everything else is shut down. But if everything else is still working, so we have no indication, we have no reason to assume that just stopping breathing, even the irreversible cessation of breathing, of respiratory function, is death. Therefore, they say, you can't conclude from any of these sources that brain death is death, as long as the heart is still pumping because it's still getting oxygen, even if it might be because you're pumping oxygen into it. At the end of the day, the heart is still pumping. We can't say for certain that that person is dead. Again, it's important to keep in mind that the conversation that was going on at the time of the Gemara, at the time of the Chassam Sofer, was talking about a reality where they couldn't envision such a thing. So to bring proofs here and there from such wording of the Chassam Sofer is very hard. The Chassam Sofer, in his mind, there was no possible reality of brain death. They weren't thinking about brain death on a ventilator with a heart still beating. So to say that that's what he was coming to, what he's coming to exclude such a scenario is hard to imagine, because again, how could he didn't envision such a possibility? But again, the burden of proof is not on saying that the person is still alive. The burden of proof is proving that the person is dead. And if you can't prove beyond a shadow of doubt that death has occurred, al pi Torah, so then you can't go ahead and assume that the person is dead, and you have to assume that he is b'cheses chayim. Be'ezus Hashem, this whole discussion should just be halacha shelo l'maisa, should just be for schar of limud ha-Torah. We should never be faced with such things, and we should be, all Klai Yisrael should be zoicha to Yeshua's v'nechamos b'karav.